Our prelude is Ritual and Celebration by Spears, performed by Amber.
Thank you.
Thank you, Amber. Good morning again, and welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. Whether you're connecting via Zoom or here in person, we are one community today, united in love and purpose. My name is K.D. Thompson. My pronouns are they, them. I've been a member of Prairie for about 7 years, and I've held a number of different roles, but currently I am one of the leaders of Interweave, our LGBTQ+ group. I'm a member of our Covenant group, and I'm helping to lead our book group on emotional intelligence. If this is your first time here, or your 101st time, we are glad you're here. If you carry the weight of a weary world on your shoulders, or you entered through the doors with a song in your heart and a skip in your step, we are glad you're here. If you are the loudest voice in the town square, or the subtle hand behind the scenes, we are glad you're here. If you sing like angels or mumble behind the hymnal, we are glad you're here. This community is what it is because of your presence. So welcome. Welcome into the space of love, support, justice, compassion, and fellowship. We are glad you're here. Our chalice lighting is by Eric Walker Wickstrom, and it will be read by Joanna Hatch.
We light this chalice for all who are here and all who are not. For all who have ever walked through our doors, for those who may yet find this spiritual home, and for those we can't even yet imagine. For each of us, for all of us, may this flame burn warm and bright.
Thank you. Our opening music is number 322 in the Gray Hymnal, Thanks Be for These, accompanied by Amber. Please rise in body or in spirit.
Thank you.
Today's story for all ages is The Invisible String by Patrice Karst, illustrated by Jeff Stevenson. Youth and adults are welcome to gather around up front to listen to the story. After the story, we'll sing our youth out. The lyrics are in your order of service.
The Invisible String by Patrice Karst. Liza and Jeremy, the twins, were asleep one calm and quiet night. Suddenly it began to rain very hard. Thunder rumbled until it got so loud that it woke them up. "Mommy, Mommy," they cried out as they ran to her. "Don't worry, you two, it's just the storm making all that noise. Go back to bed." "We want to stay close to you," said Jeremy. "We're scared." Mom said, "You know we're always together no matter what. But how can we be together when you're not out here and we're in bed?" said Liza. Mom held something right in front of them and said, "This is how." Rubbing their sleepy eyes, the twins came closer to see what Mom was holding. "I was about your age when my mommy first told me about the invisible string."
Show the kids the invisible string.
Dee, 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 dee. "I don't see a string," said Jeremy. "You don't need to see the invisible string. People who love each other are always connected by a very special string made of love." "But if you can't see it, how do you know it's there?" asked Liza. "Even though you can't see it with your eyes, you can feel it with your heart and know that you're always connected to everyone you love." "When you're at school and you miss me, your love travels all the way along this string and I feel a tug in my heart. And when you tug it right back, we feel it in our hearts," said Jeremy. "Does Jasper the cat have an invisible string?" Liza asked. "She sure does," said Mom. "And best friends like me and Lucy?" asked Liza. "Best friends too. How far can the string reach?" "Anywhere and everywhere," Mom said. "Would it reach me even if I were a submarine captain deep in the ocean?" asked Jeremy. "Yes," said Mom, "even there." "Or a mountain climber?" "Even there." "How about an astronaut out in space?" "Yes, even there." "Does the string go away when you're mad at us?" "Never," said Mom. "Love is stronger than anger, and as long as love is in your heart, the string will always be there." "Or what time you go to bed?" You skipped pages. Yeah, you skipped pages.
Okay.
"Even when you get older and can't agree about things like what movie to see or what game to play in the back seat or what time to go to bed?" "Oh, that's right. You two should be in bed." And with that, they all laughed as Mom chased the twins back into their beds. "No one is ever alone." With a few minutes, they were asleep even though the storm was still making the same loud noises outside. As they slept, they started dreaming of all the invisible strings they have and all the strings their friends have, and their friends have, and their friends have, until everyone in the world was connected by invisible strings, and from deep inside they could now clearly see no one is ever alone.
Let us join our hearts and enter into meditation. I'll ring the time again to end this time of silence. Our presentation this morning is Engaging Our Theological Diversity by Prairie Member Avalon Hikus. Avalon is a psychotherapist and a UU lay minister who has devoted her life to the quest for truth and an understanding of life's deep mysteries. Welcome, Avalon.
Years ago, when I began giving talks at UU services, it was in response to what I perceived as a growing need within the Unitarian Universalist community movement to pursue an inquiry into more spiritual issues. My husband and I had joined our first UU congregation 10 years earlier to provide a religious community for our daughter. Over time, I became a more active member, joining committees and serving on boards. But while my own commitment grew, I noticed a pattern of others coming and going when they failed to find the spiritual content they hoped to find in our religious faith. As I learned more about our history, I saw that as Unitarian Universalists moved away from their Christian theological roots, they also left behind discussion of some important theological issues. As we fulfilled our commitment to embracing diversity, welcoming Buddhists, Muslims, Jews, pagans, and atheists, basically anyone who abided by the principles we shared, we stopped talking about things like God, worship, and the soul, perhaps afraid that our differences of opinion might divide us. Our services and discussion groups began to emphasize what could be known and expressed through reason and the intellect, focusing on UU history and social justice, worthy topics, yet leaving many feeling incomplete. I heard concern about something missing from our faith repeated to me by UUs in churches I visited across our country and even overseas. This unfulfilled thirst for religious inquiry seemed to be a pattern. But while this need was apparent everywhere I went, the response to it was less obvious. Ministers and lay leaders in our congregation seemed unwilling or unsure of how to go about addressing their congregants' deep personal, theological experiences, and beliefs. So I was delighted to discover a book published in May of 2005 by the Commission on Appraisal of the Unitarian Universalist Association. The book, entitled Engaging Our Theological Diversity, indicates that those of us desiring to embrace theological concerns within the UU community are not alone. In fact, we are a majority. The Commission of Appraisal was created with the formation of the UUA in 1961. Its mission statement reads, "Grounded in the living tradition of our free faith, yet charged with acting independently, the Commission on Appraisal's mission is to provoke deep reflection, energizing and revitalizing Unitarian Universalism." It was the Commission on Appraisal which in 2009 first proposed that we reflect upon revising Article 2, one of the bylaws of the UUA which codified our seven principles. Engaging Our Theological Diversity was the 11th book published by the Commission and was the culmination of 4 years of labor. Its findings were the result of interviews, hearings, focus groups, and surveys participated in by hundreds of UU congregation members, ministers, theological school faculty members, researchers, and UUA staff. Listen to the common thread. "I wish there were more conversations about theology and belief because I've personally been really struggling with it." And to me, this is where the UUA falls down. We offer the hope of a spiritual journey and we offer no tools to do it with. We stay in the head and we don't talk to the heart. The Commission's conclusion suggested that addressing our theological diversity might even be necessary for our survival as an association of congregations. In the Commission's conversations with UUs concerning theology, they found that, with rare exceptions, conversations about belief and theology are not regular features of our congregational life, and that this taboo seems to be based on a fear that if we start to talk about our beliefs, we may discover we are totally incompatible with one another and our congregations will fall apart. The theological differences among us, while addressed at a superficial level, are not discussed and examined with openness, care, and intentionality in broad UU circles. However, the generations coming to maturity today are showing a renewed interest in spirituality, and if we can gain their attention, the Commission concludes, we might become a prominent religious movement. One of the stated goals of the report was to promote the idea that our diversity rests upon common ground, the principles and values we share. They wanted to give people permission to talk about their beliefs without fear of harming their congregations. They maintain that a diverse community can discuss theological beliefs with each other without having to adopt a primary theological doctrine. According to a report published by the UUA in 1963, entitled "The Free Church in a Changing World," a liberal religious perspective is characterized by openness to different theological emphases, which flourish in dialogue with one another. In most churches, theological quandary is personal rather than institutional. At the heart of our church lies the principle that theological questions shall be kept open. Nonetheless, we do seem to agree on some general theological affirmations. These include the humanity of Jesus, congregational polity or independent self-governance, and the human origins of the Bible. In addition, our faith emphasizes acceptance of one another and a non-judgmental approach to differences between people, minimizing the relevance of forgiveness. This is a markedly different value system than that promulgated by religious traditions, which make rigid distinctions between right and wrong, promise punishment for unrepentant sinners, and rely on God or priests for absolution. So one of the Commission's goals was to launch a conversation that allows for the fact that Unitarian Universalism has a theology, an idea frequently de-emphasized in favor of ethics. What are some of the other questions asked by theologians? One is regarding the nature of the cosmos, how we understand the physical world and our place in it. According to the Commission, the principle which most clearly expressed UU cosmology was that which referred to the interdependent web of existence of which we are all a part. The current UU understanding of an interdependent and interconnected cosmos evolved from a theology we can trace back to our Christian roots, to the biblical book of Genesis. Common interpretations of Genesis hold that human beings are the pinnacle of all creation, that we are God's favored creatures, and that everything in creation exists for our explicit benefit. More liberal interpretations hold that human beings are the custodians of creation, but both create a human-centered cosmology. But scientific discoveries made by Isaac Newton and Charles Darwin, among others, began to make it clear that human beings were merely a part of creation rather than its centerpiece. Unitarians, as the most radical and free-thinking branch of the Protestant Reformation, embraced this view of existence. While this cosmology is shared by many Eastern, Earth-centered, and Native American traditions, it does differentiate us from other Judeo-Christian faiths. A second question addressed by theologians is the source of religious authority. UUs distinguish themselves from other religious groups in terms of where they find it. Over 500 years ago, our forebears challenged the authority of religious institution. Today, scriptures are seen more often as inspirational than authoritative. Instead, our primary religious authority is our own experience. UU historian David Park affirms that our personal truths begin and end in direct experience. While we value the insights of others, we give priority to that which we ourselves have encountered. We appreciate the testimony of others, but engage with the world to discover truth, placing little emphasis on ancient scriptures or borrowed authority. However, trust in our personal experience is not held in a vacuum. Many UUs choose to deepen their understanding by sharing their stories and engaging in dialogue within their communities. One reason we participate in covenant groups, called journey groups here at Prairie, is the appreciation of the power of dialogue as a spiritual practice and a recognition of the wisdom to be garnered during a respectful exchange of experiences and ideas. However, while most respondents to theology surveys distributed by the Commission on Appraisal rated direct experience of mystery to be very important, a solid 90% stated that they were committed to the use of reason to interpret our experience and form and test our religious convictions. Valuing both spiritual experience and reason as significant sources of religious authority may be unique among world religions. That being the case, what do UUs say about God, who by most faiths is the ultimate religious authority? Among the nearly 800 UUs who provided the Commission with a statement about what was at the core of their personal faith, 30% named a transcendent dimension, whether or not they called it God. One wrote, "At the center is and always has been a rooted personal and living sense of connection to Source, the Eternal, what as a child I was taught to name God." And, "I believe in God, but not in the traditional sense. For me, God is the organizing force of the universe, the rays of sun that shine through breaking clouds on the horizon, and most importantly, that which gives existence to all kinds of love between human beings. Other participants, rather than using the word God, seemed to find greater resonance with the word spirituality, a word Minister Nancy Arnold calls that elusive term that almost defies definition. She says, spirituality points beyond the ordinary, beyond the narrow confines of the self, beyond expectation. Because the spiritual is beyond our control, it is never exactly what we expect. In addition, 58% of lay respondents and 81% of clergy reported having had mystical, spiritual experiences, a profound sense of oneness with all that is, or a sense of something uniting all things. Minister Lex Crane argues for rational mysticism at the core of UU religion. The rational perspective divides reality into discrete parts and gives a name to each part so that it can be held in the mind and expressed in speech. The mystical worldview does the reverse. It sets aside all words, concepts, or divisions and perceives the world as one unified whole, radiant with meaning, and oneself set down in it, an integral part of it all. If we learn to perceive the world now through mystical eyes, and then at other times from a rational perspective, we begin to approach seeing the whole. We get closer to reality, to God. A third question addressed by theologians asks about the nature of the human being regarding good and evil. According to the commission, among the statements considered most important by all groups surveyed was this one: humans are born with the potential to be good. We are committed to nurturing good through love and learning. Present-day UUs disagree with those who view evil or sinfulness as an inherent state of being. We are far more likely to characterize people's actions or inactions as good or bad, emphasizing personal choice. Although dismayed by many events in human history, we still tend to believe that human commitment and energy can change many of the wrongs of the world. We believe our salvation, if it is to be had, lies largely in the hands of individuals and strengthening the individual's potential to be a positive force in the world. That being the case, what is the nature of our religious community? While there are many kinds of events and activities in most UU congregations, the primary venue through which we meet is the Sunday service. Our history and tradition have called the purpose of this coming together worship. However, since few UUs seek or attempt to use Sunday services to praise or make requests to God, what are we doing here? Interviews with members of congregations I have visited confirm the commission's finding that few who attend our services find religious inspiration or experience there. What I find illuminating is the Commission's explanation of this. They maintain that our lack of inspiration is due to our having become accustomed to an entertainment model of worship. That is, the perception that what we receive from a service has to do with what is presented to us. They suggest that it is not enough to want readings or sermons to inspire us. We have to be willing to be inspired. That doesn't require a particular theology or theistic thinking, but rather openness to experience. The Commission's report suggests that we are transformed by offering something of ourselves rather than by what we expect to receive. Worship invites us to deepen our relationship with the miracle of life. Services offer us the opportunity to live and celebrate our principles and values and to strengthen our spirits so that we may fulfill our mission in the world, encouraging personal transformation and helping others. Many UUs report that cultivating religious feeling and spiritual experience reinvigorates their commitment to justice making and community service. Next, many respondents to the commission survey supported the general observation that there has been a shift in Unitarian Universalism away from a humanist center to a more eclectic mix of philosophies or theologies. So it is not surprising that at least some of the many you use who identify themselves theologically as humanists feel particularly embattled. However, since the humanist ability to knit together disparate elements of life without relying on supernatural explanations is such an important part of our intellectual heritage, the Commission warns that it would be a serious mistake to allow humanist philosophy to be marginalized. Concurrently, the report encourages humanists to consider that not all references to what might appear to be religious belief signify the relinquishment of reason as a powerful element in UU's spiritual lives. Another subject on which the Commission spent considerable time was our relationship to Christianity. Though there are many UU Christians, they, like the humanists, have become a minority within the denomination. Often, they too feel marginalized. While the Commission does not suggest that Unitarian Universalism should become a Christian denomination again, it does strongly recommend that individual UUs make peace with their religious roots, and that as an institution, Unitarian Universalism make peace with its Christian heritage. Since many UUs come to our faith because of having been wounded in the faiths of their upbringing, reactivity to those faiths is common. But failure to grow beyond those early experiences, the Commission warns, can limit our access to the wisdom of our Judeo-Christian heritage. In conclusion, the Commission recommends that individual UUs and congregations acknowledge and engage in their theological diversity rather than avoiding it. A growing emphasis on right relations in congregations and a strong sense of mission and inclusiveness encourages us to accept our different perspectives. Not only can conversation promote tolerance and understanding, but our differences may be seen as the very thing which generates interest and stimulates personal growth among us. The Commission recommends that open sharing about theology happen intentionally through adult religious education programs, small group ministry, and other congregational events. They hoped their report would be the beginning of that process among congregations nationwide. Dialogue may help us move beyond our fear of theological diversity to understanding and learning from each other. Since joining Prairie 3 years ago, I have met members who identify as Christian, Buddhist, pagan, Muslim, Jewish, atheist, and agnostic. Sharing stories about our personal religious journeys, rituals, prayers, or meditations, and what they mean to us, without giving or taking offense, furthers our commitment toward peace and justice in the world, beginning with ourselves. Let's share.
Thank you, Evelyn. Now is the time that our community dedicates for discussion around the focus of today's service, relying upon our covenant of good relations as a guide to ensure all voices are welcomed and relationships are valued. We have until 10:55 for discussion. As you approach the podium, please watch your step near the microphone cord. Form a line on either side of the room or raise your hand to receive a microphone. Introducing yourself with your name and pronouns is welcomed. For those on Zoom, please raise a virtual hand, unmute once called on, or you may type into the chat to have your comment read aloud.
Heidi Hughes, she, her. Well, I think something that would be awesome following this talk, Avalon, is to come back to when I first joined and we had, in maybe 2007 and 2008, had a series of This I Believe. And I think it's modeled after a radio program. You guys can fill in the details or someone that knows that. But I felt like when people could really say what they believed and the prompts were like, what do you think happens to us after we die? Or what do you believe? Or what do you believe? Or how do you believe? Or do you believe there's a God or something about really, you know, open questions like that? It helps us know each other and just, I think, respect each other's beliefs when we can publicly say that. And it's a very safe space to do it.
Fatima Rashid, she, her. I just kind of had, thank you for your interesting lecture. I had a couple kind of follow-up just thoughts and questions about the studies and sample sizes and things like that that I would love if you'd be open to sharing. I think it was interesting to hear your perspective about your thoughts on like the wisdom that you believe those beliefs have to offer. I think, you know, not everybody would necessarily agree on that perspective, but I appreciate you sharing it, and would be curious to see kind of more of those studies and the sample sizes and, you know, how long those were carried on and carried forward. Because I do feel like maybe among peers in my generation, I feel like there's definitely moving away from that in groups, and that would kind of push people away. But I do kind of see that there are people that have that need and would appreciate sharing those things. So I'd love to hear more about that. Thank you.
Well, I grew up Catholic. My mother was very strict in her religion, and I found that religion was not a crutch for me. It was like somebody had described one time being given a bucket of sand to carry around with you your whole life. To me, it was a great burden, and all that was more of it's a horror. But when I was about 21, I just decided that since God knows everything I think and feel, and I will go to hell if I don't love God, then I'm just going to have to go to hell because I do not believe this. I just thought God was a psychopath. And so I quit going to church and just expected that I would go to hell. But then I met more people that believed in other things. And I read books on other beliefs. So I got away from that fear of God sending me to hell. And I had experiences that told me that there's a lot more to life, to what we don't understand, things that are beyond our five senses. And I could give you many instances of experiences that I had, but I'll tell you one was when I got a job working at a group home for autistic adults. Now I was really new in this, working for this group home, and I didn't want to take my purse with me because I just have to leave it there, you know, and go off. I couldn't carry it around with me while I was working. So every day I'd just take my driver's license and $3, which I figured if I wanted a candy bar or something and I had to buy it, it would cover it. So every day I put this $3 in a drawer, and every day when I went to work, I'd take that $3 out of the drawer and stuff it in my pocket. After maybe 3 or 4 weeks of doing that, just automatically put the $3 in my pocket and go to work, one day I picked up the $3 and I heard a voice, and I was alone in the apartment. I heard a voice say, "Take the 10. There was a $10 bill there in that drawer. I definitely heard this voice. I don't know where it came from, whether it just was in my head or what, but I heard, "Take the 10. And so I put the $3 back, and I took the 10 and put it in my pocket. And that evening when we took the residents of the group home to a mall, and I took one of the residents to the record store. This was vinyl records. And he didn't have enough money to buy the record he wanted, so he threw a tantrum, a terrible, terrible tantrum in the store, hitting himself in the head and shouting. And so I took the 10 out of my pocket and paid for the record and got him out of the store that way. I don't know what would have happened if I hadn't had that $10 bill in my pocket. But that was just one example of things that have happened to me. And I have actually been mad at the voice for sometimes not warning me why I would get a warning sometimes and other times this voice is silent. So, you know, that's my reason for believing there's more to it. But I don't believe in religion at all. I think there's a God that's probably, you know, not at all like the religions tell you. But I better stop here anyway.
Hi, Josh Turner, him. I think like the belief thing really kind of struck me because it was a couple years ago I was watching Ted Lasso, and then that's a central theme in that show, and I was kind of like, well, what do I believe, and like, why do I believe what I believe? And then so from going from there, I was like, I grew up religious in a pretty fundamental church, but then I became a scientist and then kind of was more grounded in the physical realm of the world. And then I kind of was like, well, why do I believe what I believe and why do I approach the world the way I approach it? So then that's where I kind of came to like an existentialism and I've heard like optimistic nihilism kind of as describe it, but with no like really inherent meaning. But for some reason, our brains are really good at creating meaning in a lot of things and trying to string stories together. So it's kind of that duality of thing, like especially when you get into physics and stuff, like, you know, it's like, you know, light is both a wave and a particle. So it's kind of like, what do we really know? So, but that's where it's kind of like, well, I believe certain things and then hopefully that works out. And that's what gets me through life. But yeah, that's what I could say.
John Garnett, he, him. I don't know if it was Reverend Matt or Reverend Ralph that gave a presentation about the history of Unitarian Universalists. And he addressed it as being a community of thinkers. And that when the Queen of England churches were breaking off from the Church of England. They were taught, and they took their piece of it. They went along and started religions. But Universalists, Unitarians never stopped thinking. And Avalon's presentation today kind of concluded that to me. There's so much going, there's so much thinking going on, that that's who we are. We're a group of thinkers.
All right, I get the last word, I guess. I really appreciated your talk, Evelyn, because I am one of the people here who is seeking more spirituality. And I think often we kind of surround ourselves with people who believe similarly to us. So I've had a lot of conversations with folks here who also are looking for more spirituality, but my impression, and this may or may not be accurate, but is that Prairie prefers to be thinkers and not to talk about spirituality very much. But I disagree with the comment about younger people, like kind of moving away from this. As you may know, I'm a professor of religious studies when I'm not here at Prairie. So I'm working with a lot of 20-year-olds. And even though my classes are not teaching them, you know, to believe any particular religious tradition, I've been surprised to see how religious they are and how interested they are in talking about not only their own beliefs and practices, but also learning about others' theology. So I think, you know, if we were to follow Evelyn's advice and bring that a little more, it might actually draw younger folks to Unitarian Universalism. We're sharing our offering this quarter with the Catalyst Project, a mutually supportive community for single mothers and their children who have experienced homelessness. Our offertory is Capricho Catalan, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, from España by Albanese, performed by Amber. Thank you. Our closing words are by Sherry Prudhomme, read by Ken Skog.
The patchwork quilt of our theological heritage is torn and fraying in places, and it is stunningly vibrant in others. Some sections have been mended or wholly replaced. As we mature spiritually as a tradition and as people, we develop our capacities to be with the broken and the beautiful, the contradictions and the complexities.
Thank you, Ken. Our closing music is number 123 in the Gray Hymnal, Spirit of Life, accompanied by Amber. We have a few announcements. Today, after the service, there is a Prairie Leadership Forum starting at noon in this room. This meeting is for committee chairs or representatives, board members, staff, and any other interested members. Also today, after the service, there will be Girl Scout cookies for sale in the foyer, and you can take them home today. Next Sunday service is Healing Communities Through Kinship by Mary Sue Rudabuck. Mary Sue will share the inspiring work of Greg Boyle, who launched Homeboy Industries, which has grown into the largest gang reentry program in the country today. We'll have a potluck after the service. And there's a reminder about that too. Bring your favorite food to share. In 2 weeks, on March 9th, we have a special intergenerational service where our youth will present a play based on the story of the Good Samaritan. Chris Porter has an announcement about the spring auction.
So we're just 3 weeks away from our spring auction. It's on the March 16th. And, you know, and this is one of our biggest fundraisers, and we have a goal of raising $11,000 this year from our auction. And I think we can do it. So today I just wanted to focus a little bit on services that people offer for the auction, and maybe that you could do a service, offer a service, and maybe even include your family in it. This is a very popular item, and people have done things like offering rides to the airport or helping clean out a closet or painting. And I kind of wanted to ask if others can let us know some services that you bought at a past auction that might be a good idea to offer again.
Helping weed the garden.
Any other offerings? Like I also had yard work help too. But if you do offer a service, number one, when you put the description in your item, set a block of time so people know what they're bidding on. And then also, like I said, you might get your family involved in this. And then consider whether you're offering just one service or are you offering it for multiple people, and include that in your description as well. And so if you want to donate an item, the easiest way to do that is to go to our website and enter it on the website. But we also have paper forms in the back that you can use. So you can pick one of those up. And also just check out the website to see what's been offered so far. It might give you an idea what you can offer, or you might find something you want to bid on. Thanks.
What time is that? What time is the auction?
It's basically starting right away. Our service on the 16th is the auction.
There are some more announcements in your order of service and in the news of the week email. At this time, we are stopping the recording.